Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing. Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. Offnow.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show, on the Liberty Express, libertyexpressradio.com. The great Alan Butler and family over there at libertyexpressradio.com. Also at dailypaul.com. Or dailypaulradio.com, I guess that is. Sorry about that. And, and like that. So good. ScottHorton.org, that's my site. Okay, our guest today, looks like he'll be the only guest today. It's our friend Kevin Zeese. Welcome back to the show. Kevin, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good. Now, so I'm sorry, I don't have it prepared. I need to try to think off of the top of my head about your bio. You're a lawyer, and you're on the board of the Save Chelsea Manning thing, right?
That's right. And my main project is Popular Resistance, which is a site about the resistance movement in the United States and around the world. It's popularresistance.org. I'm also in the steering committee of Come Home America, which is trying to unite the right and left against war. And I'm also a co-director of It's Our Economy, which is an effort to democratize the economy. So I got a few balls in the air.
All right. Come Home America, that to me is, the most important project of all. I wish I had $1 zillion, man. I would put $1 zillion behind Come Home America and make that the thing.
Money would make a difference. There's no question about it. All these projects, the resources are needed to really help good people do good work.
Yep. And, Come Home America, the left and right libertarian coalition, we don't care what you believe about anything except let's all agree, let's end these wars. Let's roll back this empire and let's do it right now.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. All right, comehomeamerica.us, that is, everybody. All right, good. So, Kevin, now, you've got a piece here with Margaret Flowers. I'm sorry I'm not familiar here, but it ran in Truth Out, correct? And it's going to run at antiwar.com.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's running in a bunch of outlets. It's basically looking at the Syrian so-called peace process.
Uh-huh. It's called...
And, sometimes they tell us something is for one thing and it's actually for another. It happens quite often, actually.
Hang on. Let me make sure everybody's got the title to Google up while we're talking here. Is Syrian Peace Conference Laying the Foundation for War? That's the title of the article here. And now, so yes, saying one thing and doing another, please explain.
Well, that's I think one of the biggest problems we face in understanding what's going on around us. The government and the corporate mass media puts out a line, that we're going to war for democracy, right? Or we're going to increase employment by passing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or we're going to have a Syrian peace process to prevent war. Often the truth is the opposite. And I think the way the Syrian peace process has developed is quite evident. That there's no real likelihood of finding any peace in this process, and that what it's really doing is laying the foundations for war. And there are a number of reasons that why we come to that conclusion. And so we put it out there so people would in the anti-war movement would start to prepare for what we see is it's going to be a coming drumbeat for war. We need to stop the attack on Syria once again.
Right. Okay. So yeah, that's an important point that. People got to, those of us who are going to stay good on this, we've got to have our arguments in a row so that, we can't be intimidated out of the debate by the war party.
Exactly. We have to, it's so important. I mean, a lot of our job as activists is to let people, see the truth, lift the veil so we can see what's happening. And there are basically three reasons why we think this peace process is doomed to failure. First, they cut out Iran. Now, Iran, you know, they have Saudi Arabia in there, they have France in there, they have all sorts of countries are part of this peace process, but Iran was invited and then disinvited. Disinvited because the United States and its Syrian opposition group, wanted Iran out. And so they took Iran out. I mean, that was a terrible error that showed that this is a rigged process. They only want one result, and Iran has to leave because it opposes that result. The second reason why we see failure is because of who else was not invited. There has been a civil society opposition to Assad that existed before this war began, and that civil society is not included in these negotiations. So Syrians who've been working for transformation have not been included. Second, a lot of on-the-ground fighters are not included. There's only one opposition group included, and that's one that has been endorsed by the United States. And anyone else who has not been endorsed by the Western powers is excluded. And now that leads to a real problem, because let's say they negotiate a peace or a ceasefire or, you know, some kind of stopping of the war for a short time. The people who are in that room aren't all fighting the war. In fact, the main fighters are outside of that room. And so Assad agrees to a peace process, and then on the ground, in reality, those who are not in that room continue the war. So then Assad responds when he's attacked, and the United States says, you're violating the peace agreement, and that the only way to enforce that is to go to war. And so it's almost a guarantee for Assad to face military attack by the United States if he agrees to peace in this process. And the third thing, and most important reason why this really is a fraud, is because the United States and the one Syrian opposition group that's there has been insisting that before negotiations can begin, Assad has to agree to leave government. And, you know, they claim it's based on the preconditions for this meeting, the Geneva Accords that led to this meeting. And of course, if you read those agreements, there's nothing in there about Assad leaving. There's talk of a transformation of the government, but it doesn't say Assad can't be part of that government. So it's a false statement by John Kerry. It's a false statement by the Syrian opposition that the United States supports. And it's a false basis for negotiation. The United States government, Israel, Saudi Arabia have wanted the Assads out since before, the current Assad going back to his father. And this is a long-term geopolitical goal because Syria is very important to Russia and very important to Iran, two countries the United States is in opposition with. And so this is really about the U.S. getting more control over the region, Saudi Arabia and Israel getting what they want, and weakening Russia and Iran. And so the precondition of having Assad leave shows that this is really a phony negotiation. And again, that presents an opportunity for an excuse for war. You can see the U.S. mass media saying something like, Assad refuses to participate in the peace process. He refuses to agree to the conditions that were set by all the parties. It would be a lie, but our media lies to us often. And so for those three reasons, the Assad factor, the lack of inclusion of Syrian civil society and the fires on the ground, and the exclusion of Iran, this peace process is a fraud, and it's really designed to lay the groundwork for U.S. military intervention in the region.
Mm-hmm. In other words, in a short time from now, John Kerry will be saying, look, we tried to deal with them, but you can't deal with Bashar al-Assad.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
Okay,
and
now...
Kerry has just like been proven that so far in his term as attorney general, as a Secretary of State, to really be a big war supporter. When the last round of the Syrian war was popping up, he was pushing war much more aggressively than the Pentagon was. The Pentagon was trying to hold him back, explaining why it couldn't work, why it was a bad idea, why it would be counterproductive, but Kerry was pushing hard for war. You saw in those hearings before Congress, Defense Secretary Hagel being pretty silent, the military command being pretty silent, and John Kerry doing all the talking for war.
Right. Yeah, and it's funny, too, because here he is. He's at least, I don't want to get too far diverted off onto the separate subjects, but as far as Kerry goes, he's at least kind of halfway pushing to try to have a peace deal in Palestine and a peace deal with Iran. And, of course, the whole point, like you're saying, or a huge part of why to you know, work toward the overthrow or at least the diminishing of the power of the Baathists in Syria is to hurt the Iranians. At the same time, he's the one trying to make peace with them harder than anybody else in D.C. The hell's that?
That's exactly true. And, as far as Israel and Iran, I think we've got to watch those processes closely, too. You've got to really doubt what the U.S. government says they're doing, when they're doing it, and really look closely to see what's really going on.
Right. And we can get back to those subjects later on, too. But I want to make sure we get all this, the Geneva stuff covered. Now, first of all, what you say about Kerry invoking the Geneva One Accord as saying that Assad must go. It doesn't say Assad must go. It says there will be some kind of transitional this, that, the other thing. Now, the Syrians themselves signed on to that back at Geneva One, correct? Assad signed on to that?
Not only did they sign on, but Russia signed on. Now, Russia is Syria's closest ally.
See, that's what I thought, was that the Syrians had agreed, Assad himself had agreed, that he would end up leaving power at the end of the transition to the new regime, or he was willing to agree to that before they even came up with all the steps of what it's going to look like after he's gone.
It actually didn't say that. It didn't say Assad would agree to leave. It said there'd be a transition in government. That could merely mean new elections. And Assad can be a candidate. It doesn't mean Assad's not
voted.
We don't know what that means. And I think what
the discrepancy was just whether it means now or ever, but you're saying it doesn't mean that at all.
Assad leaving. Yeah. That's right. It doesn't even say Assad would leave.
And of course, if they held elections in Syria right now, he'd win hands down.
Well, who knows? But I think that's probably a good guess. I mean, there are people who support him there. And his family's been in power for a long time, and that carries a lot of weight with people who live in countries. But so who knows what it would mean? I don't know if he'd be winning an election or not. I have not polled the Syrian people. Have not seen any polls of the Syrian people. So who knows? And he certainly has made some mistakes, serious mistakes, as president too. So if there was a real campaign, who knows what could happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't think hardly anybody there likes him, but there are a lot of people who prefer him to a good beheading, so.
Well, the alternative is always, in elections, the alternative is always matter. You may not like the incumbent, but the alternative may be worse.
That's true. In fact, all the complaint I do about Obama, can you imagine if it had been John McCain all this time, how many of us would already burn to death in nuclear fireballs by now? Holy moly.
Or Hillary Clinton. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of worse choices. I mean, Obama is, disappointing to a lot of people for good reason. I don't use the word disappointing because I never expected much from him, but I think he's made a ton of mistakes and is a very disappointing president. He's not done very well, missed tremendous opportunities on really solving economic problems and ending wars. He just didn't make it happen. And so he's been really bad, but there's so many worse choices from Romney and McCain to Clinton, all who ran against him. I don't think they'd be doing any better, and they'd probably be doing worse.
All right, now let me ask you this. Tea leaves, Kremlinology kind of a thing without anything real definitive. It seems like, crap, now we got to go out to this break. Well, my question going out to this break is, it sort of seemed like some Israelis and Democrats in D.C. were getting it through their stupid skulls that backing al-Qaeda in Syria actually is not a very good idea, and that maybe they would change their policy or at least, tone it down.
Right.
We'll find out what you think of that when we get back from this break.
Okay.
It's the great Kevin Zeese from ComeHomeAmerica.us. Hey, y'all, Scott here. So you made a little bit of money in this horrid economy only to find that the Fed has more or less outlawed saving. So into the treacherous waters of the stock market bubble you go. But how to make a little money without too much risk of losing it all? Check out WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who opens a very real window into his main account, updating his subscribers on the facts of and the reasoning behind all his market moves. Follow along on paper or with real money and see what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Kevin Zeese from ComeHomeAmerica.us and PopularResistance.org and other URLs like that. He's got this piece running at Truth Out. It'll be at antiwar.com tomorrow. Well, what the hell did I do with it? Here it is. It's called, Is the Syrian Peace Conference Really Laying the Foundation for War? And so let me set that question up here again real quick. Kevin, we've been talking about this. I've been talking about this with you and with other people on the show for years and years and years, going way, way back, about how any of these neocons who think that they're going to get a regime change in Syria and get anything like what anything that would be acceptable to them after a regime change in Syria. They must be crazy. Their plan for Iraq was they were going to get a Hashemite king like in Jordan, a different minority emperor backed by the United States to rule and lord it over the Shiite minority. If you read David Wormser talking about how, oh, don't worry, the Shiites love the Hashemite kings and all that, it'd be great. Well, no, they just turned the whole country over to Iran. It's not a de facto Israeli emirate like Jordan. It's an Iranian one, or at least most of it is. So these guys, all they're expediting the chaotic collapse and whatever. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They never get what they want. And anyone for years could have told them, if they listened to this show, they could have heard people on this show saying, well, me, saying, look, your best chance, if you get rid of the Baathists, if you're lucky, would be to get the Muslim Brotherhood. That's if you're lucky. Those guys would be the moderates. But more likely, you're going to be dealing with a bunch of suicide bomber kooks left over from the Iraq War and whatever. I mean, this is all so foreseeable. And yet, the policy has been, well, you can describe it in your own terms if you want, but it seems to me like the policy's been for 2.5, going on 3 years now, that America and Saudi Arabia support the jihadists in their work to overthrow Assad. But then, oh, and this is what I was going to say and was saying before the break. It seems like they kind of finally started maybe going back through the archives and listening to some stuff from 6 years ago telling them not to do this. Because they're saying, well, geez, the Israelis and the Americans too, saying, huh, well, maybe if we got rid of the Baathists and we just had a bunch of suicide bombers on our northern border, that actually maybe that would not be preferable to our current situation. So I just wonder, you know, what you think of it. I mean, it seems like, you know, John Kerry got the memo, if that is right at all. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think the United States has a very confused foreign policy, and the United States Empire is not as strong as it thought it would be in this time of a one superpower world. They really thought they could dictate and get what they wanted, and they've now discovered in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya that, you know, they can go to war, they can explode a lot of things, destroy a lot of things. They can't put in place a government that necessarily will agree with them. But I think they also have the conclusion that if they can't put the government in place they want, it's better to have these governments that oppose them out, so that if the country's in chaos, in civil war, in tribal war, divided, weakening itself by internal factions, that's better than having someone in office who opposes their agenda. They at least neutralize that country. You know, I think that's.
But now let me ask you this. In what way does Syria oppose America or Israel's agenda? They torture who they're told to torture. They haven't said a word about the Golan Heights in 20 years or whatever. I mean, what's the problem?
And you could say the same thing about Gaddafi, you know, in Libya. I mean, but these are viewed as countries that are allied with Iran and the Soviet Union. I mean, excuse me, it was Russia. And therefore, they're on the wrong side. And if you want to have hegemony in the region, you have to have pro-Israel, pro-U.S., pro-Saudi Arabia. That's the triad right now that really they want to see dominating that region. Mm-hmm. And so that's I think what the view is. Now, the other bizarre thing about this is creating foment and wars and civil wars and tribal wars in the region is really also inconsistent with the U.S. trying to move so much force to Asia. You know, the Asian pivot, encircling China because it's becoming an economic rival, is also going on. And so it's really kind of crazy because they really don't have the troops to be in multiple wars in the Middle East and then also moving troops to China. So it's a very confused foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if they want, say, like half a war and maybe not a whole regime change, but let's just weaken Assad and then, you know, at some point somewhat call it off and go from there or whatever, they're in a real bad position now where even if they really wanted to do a peace deal, you can't bring Al-Qaeda to the table, right? I mean, even if you can somehow, you know, do a Skype conference call with Ayman al-Zawahiri and Prince Bandar and everybody, you're not going to be able to call off a bunch of suicide bomber prisoner beheaders. These guys are going to keep killing until they feel like they're done. Who can call them back?
A lot of that.
Who can call them to Geneva, Switzerland, to sit down at a big oak table and have a conversation about this stuff?
Well, That's an interesting image. A lot of that problem really is coming from Qatar and Saudi Arabia. They are the ones that have been funding the more extremist groups down there. It's not all that, but there's so many different factions. You can't even define them all. So I think they've created a very difficult situation to calm down, and they're probably just going to have to burn themselves out fighting, because I don't know. I mean, Saudi Arabia can withdraw its money. The U.S. is now, arming people in Syria with anti-tank weapons and with small arms. This is so amazing. In a secret vote, the U.S. Congress approved arming some of the factions, in the moderate, so-called moderate factions in Syria, with small arms and anti-tank weapons. A secret vote for a war policy. That's just, to me, it's so incredible. The way they did it was part of the NDAA, and I guess parts of that law are secret. Mm-hmm. And so that was voted on by the Congress in secret.
Well, and what moderates among the rebels in Syria? There never have been. I mean, the closest thing they had to moderates was the Al-Farouq Brigade, because they wanted to hold elections rather than just have an outright dictatorship of the imams or whatever the hell. And yet the Farouk Brigades, that's the cannibal guy, was from the Farouk Brigades, the guy eating the guy's heart or liver or whatever in the face.
I know.
Moderate. And the Free Syrian Army, the New York Times even says the Free Syrian Army quit existing back the end of December.
Right.
It fell apart completely.
And yet the United States is now arming so-called moderates based on a secretly passed law. Bizarre. What a crazy country we are.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous.
I mean, secretly passed laws after the Congress, stops in a military attack on Syria because the people responded so aggressively from across the political spectrum, saying, no, we don't want another war. And the Congress said, okay, we won't do another war, and stops Obama from going forward. Then they have a secret vote after that to arm factions in Syria. I find it just be totally bizarre. But then again, we've had this secret negotiation going on for, 4 years now for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, to give us economic hegemony over the Asia and the Pacific. Mm-hmm. And that's been done in secret. They plan to try to pass it through Congress without Congress really seeing the law in any serious way. And so, it's just this democracy has gotten so strange, and calling it democracy is getting harder and harder.
By the way, real quick at the end here, can you talk a little bit about that the torture report put out by the government of Qatar and Christian Amanpour on CNN?
Oh, man.
At the dawn of this. How skeptical are you about those pictures there? What is all that?
Oh, I think I'm totally skeptical. There was a really excellent article in the Christian Science Monitor by a reporter who looked at it. He said that this was a one-source report, and one source for it, and that source was anonymous. And has been part of a group that's been trying to overthrow Assad since 2011.
And they even admit that much of it. So for all we know, these are pictures of Bahrainis being tortured by American
and
tax dollars.
And the other thing that's so weird about it, is it was so rushed. 3 days after they interviewed this guy, the report was finished. And it's paid for by Qatar, which is one of the biggest antagonists to Assad in the region. So it all adds up to something that needs to be looked at very carefully and questioned very closely. How do you verify where pictures came from? Who's doing the torturing? Who was tortured? And the exaggerated numbers, they only looked at a small percentage of the photos before they issued the report, and the number 11,000 was extrapolated from a very small percentage. So it's 11,000 is a guess figure, on top of this being a rushed report written based on one anonymous informant. So I think there's lots of questions about it. The timing obviously was set, so it'll be the beginning of the Geneva conference, the peace conference, and so they got the kind of propaganda they wanted to get out before the conference started.
Man, that Christian Amanpour, any other story with a single source like that, like say if it was to, lie us into war with a country that she didn't want bombed or something, she would never go with such shoddy sourcing.
She's gotten terrible. She has become,
are there any countries that she doesn't want to bomb? Maybe I set up a false premise.
She's become such a warmonger. It's really pitiful. And CNN has had a drumbeat for war in Syria now for a couple of years. they've been one of the most aggressive networks pushing for war in Syria. So it's very hard to trust them. Of course,
well, we should mention here, too, about how they've had to back away from their claims about the rocket attack from last August.
Exactly.
No, they couldn't have been fired from 9 kilometers away, more like 3, and that's rebel territory.
Exactly. And now they've hired the former Israeli ambassador to the United States, who is a former American citizen who renounced his citizenship, so he can become the ambassador from Israel to the United States. Now they've hired him as a commentator so they could bring some balance.
Michael Oren,
there.
Right? Yeah, he's the guy
exactly.
who said last October, yes, I prefer Al-Qaeda to Hezbollah. That's why you prefer
Crazy.
Al-Qaeda to Hezbollah in Syria, because Hezbollah's backed by Iran. Same guy.
Well, thanks a lot, Scott.
Thank you, Kevin. I sure appreciate it. Everybody, that's the great Kevin Zeese. ComeHomeAmerica.us. Find him on antiwar.com tomorrow, this Syria piece. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it easy and 100% anonymous. Just deposit the money into their account at any Bank of America, Wells Fargo, or credit union with shared branching, and then just email them a picture of the receipt with your Bitcoin address and you get your Bitcoins. A simple, clean, anonymous way to get Bitcoins. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Hey, I'm Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make the show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.